I can't even count the number of people who've seen my butt.
Hi, everybody. I'm Jim.
I'm Ryan.
I have to introduce myself?
Yes.
I'm the new guy. I'm Andrew.
Andrew is indeed the new guy, although you were our first guest on the podcast at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, the first repeat guest.
We talked about writing.
I'm the first repeat guest?
Yes.
Yeah.
And you didn't even hit me in the face this time.
That was on purpose. I won't say which time was on purpose.
But, we talked about writing and we talked about procrastination.
Mm.
And given that
so
it is
that.
November and given that Andrew is a NaNoWriMo veteran.
That's a fair statement.
I don't actually know that I feel good using the word veteran in that context, but you're an experienced NaNoWriMo author.
Yes.
Survivor.
Yes.
Again, survivor, you're not at risk of dying, but it's happened.
I don't know. My mental state has taken a pretty serious turn for the worse during...
Save it for your next episode.
Oh.
But, we want to do a two-part bit to talk about NaNoWriMo. So today we want to talk about how to prepare for NaNoWriMo and how to get yourself into it. Andrew, what is NaNoWriMo?
NaNoWriMo is a challenge, a contest, if you will, issued by the Office of Letters and Light, I believe it's called, for people to write a continuous piece of work, a continuous writing of 50,000 words or more in 30 days or less.
Let me be more specific. Andrew, what does NaNoWriMo stand for?
National Novel Writing Month. So, yeah, the challenge is to write a novel in a month. And a novel is defined as any continuous piece of work of 50,000 words or more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's definitely a lot of people who go over.
Oh, yes. I know someone who did 100,000. Last year or the year before. You know her, too.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's
Allison.
Yeah, really? Oh. Yeah. That was not who I thought it was.
Oh.
I thought it would be Sammy Joe. She's quite prolific. Everybody we reference here, of course, will be linked in the show notes, where you can see some of their work, or see some of the stuff they're doing right now.
All right.
We also have a selection of NaNoWriMo tips from our writing group that we're part of. The best of the best. And you can also find their work in the show notes. But first, second, I guess, because we did the NaNoWriMo definition first, icebreaker. What is the novel you would most like to write? Ryan.
So, I don't have a specific plot in mind, but the person that I've been taken with the most in terms of their writing was Borges. And I would like to write a spiritual successor to his body of work.
So, what does that mean in context for you?
I don't know, because most of his stuff was short stories. Mm-hmm. So to write a novel based on that might be stretching it, especially given the subject matter that he dealt with. For me...
You can do it in a month.
I could do it in a month. For me, it would be... The elements that his work spoke to me the most on tended to be the kind of psychological and breaking the fourth wall stuff. So when you read The Circular Ruins and all of a sudden you kind of get where everything's going. I don't want to spoil it, so if you've never read The Circular Ruins, I highly recommend you check it out. It's not very long, but when that shift happens and you realize what the twist is in the story, just, you know, blew my mind away. And even little things like his Library of Babel and such. Mm-hmm. Just, I don't know, it was the first time I think I encountered philosophy when I was in high school. Like, I didn't read any philosophy in high school, but that was the closest I had come at the time because it was so consciousness expanding. And I have no idea how I would ever do something like that because it's elements of, like, psychology and metaphysics and linguistics and language. So I don't know what that would look like, but if I could write it, that's what I would want to write.
Fair. Andrew?
I have the novel I'd most like to write in the queue to be written.
Ooh. What can you tell us about it?
What can I tell you about it? Okay, it's the novel. I want to write a novel that my daughter will read and it will change her perspective on the world.
You want her to stop going to loud parties and make sure that she keeps all those kids off your lawn?
No. No, I want her to...
Sorry, for listeners, Andrew is old.
I'm older than Jim. And Ryan, almost combined. But anyhow. No, I read Fahrenheit 451, and then immediately afterwards, I was slow to read some of the classics, so this was recently I read Fahrenheit 451, and then immediately afterwards I read Slaughterhouse-5. And in the middle of reading Slaughterhouse-5, I got this idea for a book about a girl that later becomes a group of girls that basically rebels against authority in what is known as the Known Order. So in this futuristic world...
Would you describe this girl as divergent?
Not quite like that.
Remember how you didn't get slapped in the start of the episode? I feel like there might be a slap coming.
But it's a very strong female lead character, but that starts out very young. Because my daughter's only 13.
If I could whistle because I'm smiling too much right now, I'd probably make another pop culture reference.
Please don't.
I've been listening to a lot of Fight the Future lately.
Yeah, so that's the novel I want to write. I'm realizing that my novel writing career is just beginning, and I have a few things to learn first before I can do this novel justice. So I have to finish some other things that are in the queue first before I can sit down and pen that one and really give it, you know, the proper treatment so that it becomes the book that I think it can become, which is ultimately something I'd like them to teach it in schools. That's my goal, is to get a book in a school.
I guess I'd want my book to be banned in schools. That would be the pinnacle.
Oh, that would be awesome. So that would be awesome. There's kingdom for a banned book.
I don't know. I know you can't see it on the camera. There's a John Green collection just up there, which is has books that are both.
Yes.
I liked his one comment. Somebody collected a bunch of Tumblr images of him with quotes from his Vlogbrothers things, and he's like, yeah, it's really weird to think that I wrote from a perspective of a woman. So when I say, like, I took off my bra after a long day, you read it in my voice.
Yeah, to each his own.
Yeah.
Or her own, for that matter.
Oh, man. So I am balls at writing protagonists, which is why, instead of writing fiction, I tell stories about fiction, often in the context of things like D&D, where people come and provide protagonists for me. What matters to me is sort of the world and the mythology and that stuff, but it turns out you can't just write a world. You have to have people in it who do stuff in order to want to read your book. But
they can be creatures. They don't have to be people.
It's true. But creatures would still be people. Like they would have needs and desires.
Personified.
They would be people, and like the rabbits in Watership Down are still people.
They're not humans, yeah.
But no, they're not humans, but they're non-human people.
They're characters.
Mm-hmm. And I enjoy writing characters, but I think for me it's about watching a world change. So my sort of book that I would love to write tells the story, or tells a lot of stories about a world that sort of interacts with the subtle and different and the supernatural over the course of ages. Everything from an economic apocalypse where the modern world slows to a crawl and that sort of shadow world creeps to the surface because it can't cling to the underside of human society anymore, to an electric earth which is ringed by Tesla power, and you know, like that notion of transmitting electricity, transmitted power that never was a real thing but is really cool to imagine.
It terrifies me.
Oh yeah, that too. But
I've been zapped.
And that notion of a world just that rises out of an apocalypse, and you have new this harsh blue light that casts all these brand new shadows, all the way to some kind of like space age mixed magic thing with stuff like sideways drives and artificial intelligence. And like, it's the story of a whole world that continually retells these myths and reuses these symbols. And it just, we talked about it in the writing podcast when I talked about writing as an for me as an arrangement of symbols. And it would, I would want to do that in sort of the grossest way possible. Like the, just the big broad strokes where you're like, obviously this person represents this, and this is sort of how they're interacting with these symbols in a new way. That would be really cool, but
you can do it in a month.
I could do it in a month.
I'm really pushing the nano.
No, you're right. Like, that's the thing is every the cool thing about NaNoWriMo for me is that I watch people write a book in a month, and I'm just like, the problem is not that I can say, I can't say anymore that I could never do it. I could do it in a month. I just don't.
Which is fair. Many don't.
Part of it is because I am ill-prepared.
I'm kind of torn on that subject, because I'm a pantser by, like, through and through. For those who are unaware, there's plotters and pantsers. Plotters are the people who map out every little plot twist and point and all mm-hmm. their characters and their world building, and that's all done in advance before they put the first sentence down. And then there are pantsers who, as the name suggests, fly by the seat of their pants and wing it. And I wing it. Every year, this will be my fifth nano, and every year I say, I'm totally gonna prepare, and November 1st rolls around, and every year I got a blank page in front of me, and I'm like, ah, shit. But Chuck Wendig, if you follow him...
We will link to him in the show notes, because Chuck Wendig is rad.
He's got a blog, Terrible Minds. And he just did a post on nano preparation, and mm-hmm. it's very good. I won't go into it, because he says it way better than I ever could. So yeah, preparing is like a problem, because you have to write for 30 days, right? So you'd think you'd at least have some idea. So for you, it sounds like your idea is kind of, it's flush. It's, there's enough content there that I think you could just sit down on day one and start and see what happens. I let my characters tell the story. So for me, preparing is really knowing in my head what my characters are and who they are. I don't necessarily need to know their hair color and stuff. I can fix all that later.
Yeah.
But I need to know who my characters are as people. And I usually open with dialogue and just see what happens.
Fair enough. Yeah, it's... For me, I always think about it like I think about D&D, which is my big experience with storytelling. And for there, like, I watch a story unfold over the course of years. My favorite remark is always that when people are like, there's no way that Jim planned this 4 years ago, and I get to flip in my notes and go back to the part where I'm like, yup, that is where I anticipated this moment. I didn't push you into it, but I anticipated this thing happening, and everything up to this moment makes sense. And you just had that moment where you're like, everything fits together. And I feel like if were I to pants it, I would consistently lament the lack of that, because I don't, I'm okay with not knowing where it's going, but I need to know where it ends up. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, I had that experience with two nanos ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really frustrating because I didn't have that ending. It just went. And I read the story back now and it just blathered. And some of it was usable, but most of it just people talking. I was like, ah, and it was really disappointing. So I learned from that to kind of have an ending in mind. What point am I trying to make, at least have that, how it ends, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And prepare, I killed somebody I shouldn't have,
And that's in your novel?
Yes.
Just checking.
And that's
you
where,
were the one who mentioned that NaNoWriMo gets really stressful.
Yeah. No, that's where preparation would have, a little bit of preparation would have done me a lot of good. It would have helped a lot, because when I went to finish that book, I got to that part and I was like, oh man, I totally needed that guy. Like, it reminded me of the time I was playing Ultima Underworld, if you remember that video game.
Barely.
And it was 1993, and I'm in university, and I'm playing this game. I'm actually watching a friend of mine play the game, and I would just yell instructions at him, and then he worked the keyboard to make the character do the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we came to this level with this, I don't know, crusty jerk. That's the only way I can describe this character. So we killed him. Like, right off the bat. I'm like, hey, how's it going? And we just killed the jerk. Like, four levels later, the entire level is just lava. And after a little bit of research and digging and asking around, we needed lava boots to pass the level. Guess who had them? That dude we killed four levels ago. And we had to start over.
I wonder if George R.R. Martin ever has that problem. Probably not. So, where he's just like, oh... Oh, they're dead. Oh, right. They're all dead.
Everybody is dead.
Now you just get a... you just soap opera it. Actually, no. Like, it was his twin brother that died. And
yeah.
No. If you die in the Song of Ice and Fire, you die in real life.
I know that for me, I need a place to aim towards. So, like... When I consume stories, I enjoy when all the plots or everything kind of fits together. Mm. Even if it's like a, you know, Charles Dickens, it's not until you see the point where everything actually lines up. Like, you don't, I can go either way on it. The problem I know of when it comes to my writing is because I'm so amateurish, I end up with like a teenage power fantasy or a rambling mess. So basically, I run the risk of writing something like The Last Witch Hunter, which I just saw last week, and it is definitely entertaining, but it is definitely not a good movie story thing.
I feel like that's good. Like the notion that like you've got to write that to like get it out there,
mm-hmm.
and you can see what it looks like. I think in order to write not that, it's in the same way that with anything, you have to make bad art to make good art.
Yes.
And the goal isn't just make good art, it's just make art. And a bunch of it will be junk.
Yeah, mine would definitely fall into whatever the male version of a Mary Sue is. I would totally marry
Larry Stew.
I would definitely Larry Stew.
For serious.
The hell out of you. It. And I know that would be bad. There's just nothing good to come out of Larry Stew.
I would love to read the tale of Huckmaster the Barbarian. Huckmaster, King of Blades... King of Reason cuts you in half with his wisdom.
Oh Lord!
Stop. I can make a confession right now. I'm going to cap the confession. When I used to work in the factory, I'd tell myself stories, and I would basically Larry Stew myself through a bunch of different fan canons and insert myself into the stories, and then tell a what if story. And I went through several. I'm not going to say what they were because that'd be far too embarrassing. But I've done stuff like that just because I'm working in a factory.
You need something to keep you awake.
8 to 12 hours.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
It's like push-ups for your imagination.
Yeah. And so I've done something like that where it was just an ultra-male fantasy. I can tell you one of them was like a Dragon Ball Z story, just to give you a sense.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Third Dan Huckmaster. Huckmaster is now the name of any fictional character based on Ryan, I've decided. Huckmaster the wizard.
Well,
Huckmaster the many colored. Huckmaster the dragon. Like, as opposed to Huck the magic dragon, who's a different dragon.
That's an entirely different dragon.
It is.
That's a good idea, and your ideas have to come from somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But no, I think creating those kinds of stories is good, even if they're the kinds of stories you don't want, because it gets them sort of out there and it gets you. In order to create something good, you have to in part know what something bad looks like. It's like grading. Mm. If you graded papers or tests in university or something, you in order to find out what the good stuff is, like, you can read, you can read good stuff and be like, that's good. Mm. But in order to know why it is good, a lot of the time you have to read a bunch of bad stuff, or you have to understand what, because reading something that doesn't give you what you're looking for tells you the kinds of things you were looking for.
It's true. And I don't throw anything out. I don't know if you do when you write, but I keep a folder that's just slush. Everything I write that I don't like, mm-hmm. even if I cut it from a novel, and it can be like totally different characters and anything else in that folder, I put it there. I cut it into a slush document.
I now want to do like a bi-weekly audio reading from your slush folder.
Oh, God.
It'd be amazing.
It would be so terrible.
Oh, it would be awesome.
It would be so bad that it would be good.
And now this week.
Like completely out of context?
Yes. Oh, out of context and with like adverbs coming out your ass.
Oh, yeah. No, the purplest prose.
Oh.
You should go back and...
so many flowers. It's
we had a video a couple weeks ago about... it was a dramatic reenactment that Ryan Consul and I did. From an article I wrote at Matt Art Lab about a book. I've been reviewing books there as the book nerd. But about Planet of the Wizard Bros, which was not the name of the novel. It was The Khan's Persuasion by Cynthia Felice. But it was not great. but it was so purple and so brotastic that...
Yeah, I've written... All of my poetry is like that. Every piece of poetry I've ever written is just fantastically shitty. Fantastic. I still have almost all of it before I started keeping everything I used to.
Ironically, Andrew's song lyrics quite good.
Thank you. But song lyrics are hard. I find those tricky. I could not write 30 songs in a month.
The challenge I think for songs is there is a challenge. I know a musician in Toronto who does it every year. She is amazing. She's part of Copy Red Lear, Leslie. And it's like 40 songs in 60 days or something.
It's
tough.
That would be tough.
But it's part of it is just having an idea for 40 distinct things. Or in the case of NaNoWriMo, having an idea that pushes you along through the whole thing. Like, at the end of whatever this novel is, someone is going to look at it and go, what is this about?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, it's about a person who does stuff. And like, no. Like you read something like The Great Gatsby. And you're like, what is this about? It's not just about Jay Gatsby doing things. It's about, you know, the jazz era and the sort of weirdness of being rich and... Like, there's all kinds of... It's about early 19th century America. And, you know, or you read even something like Dragon Riders of Pern, and you're like, what is this about? It's about defending various ideals, but it's also about immersing you in this world that has its own language and its own terminology and its own customs. Yeah. And
there's a screenwriting book out there called Save the Cat. Put it in the show notes. I can't remember the author's
name. All right, no, we'll dig it up.
It boils every movie down into 10 things. There are only 10 stories in the world that can be told.
I got a book we'll put in the show notes as well. It's called The Seven Plots. Same deal, though.
Same idea. There is a finite number of stories to be told.
Yeah. It's basically like rags to riches.
Yeah.
And... well, it's the only one that comes off the top of my head, but usually it's some sort of fall from grace story.
Yeah, there's the love story, and every love story actually has two love stories in it. There's the A story and the B story. And the B story is actually always a love story. Mm-hmm. The great thing with that is once you have the idea, once you know what it's about, this is where the creativity kicks in. This is where writers really kind of... thrive in the idea world, because once you have an idea, the fun is in screwing with your characters, and all you need is to just keep finding ways to mess them up, because you've got this transformation that occurs in your story. Everyone starts out in a specific state, and you kind of know where they're going, and you know what state you want everyone to end up in. And the story is really only interesting if stuff happens in the middle.
Yeah.
It's finding those, what can I do to them now? Oh, you know what? Car accident. Or so-and-so dies. Or I give them, like, rabies. Or you torture them to keep them from getting to where they're going.
I'm reminded Sid Meier, a game designer. He ran for Access. He designed some of the best strategy games in the world. And he did a game jam at University of Michigan. This is about like 8 years ago now. But there's a great video of it that I will put in the show notes. But in it, he competes in this game jam, sort of for funsies. And his whole theory of game design is you have a player, you have an objective. Add complications and just keep adding complications until it is fun, and stop adding complications when it stops being fun. And that's it.
It's a good model.
Like it's just, he's just like, so the game that he produced, he's like, you have to reach this door, but you're in a maze. Which is, okay, well, you can walk around this maze, but there's zombies in the maze. So there's a complication. You can't get caught by the zombies, but they're slow and you're quick. But sometimes there are fast ones, so you have to worry about that. But you have a gun, which helps you deal with the fast ones. But every time you shoot a fast zombie, it spawns two slow zombies and stuff like that. Like it's just he describes games as these layered complications. Bernie Suits describes them the same way in The Grasshopper. He describes them as voluntarily overcoming unnecessary obstacles. And it seems like what you're describing is that same sort of notion of you're placing obstacles in the way of these people from reaching their transformation.
Yeah, you're basically, your job as a writer is to be a sociopath for your characters. You're that jerk pulling the strings and just getting off on their misery and heartache and problem.
I think there's lots of ways to do it without misery and heartache.
Well, I do it for misery and heartache.
That are still interesting. I should mention
don't write love stories.
No, Andrew writes like crime and thriller novels.
Yeah. Yeah, people die. And there are some really terrible people in my books.
It's going to be really interesting for me to go back and watch this video, because throughout the entire time of you two talking right now, I just came up with an idea for something to write over November. It would basically, the premise would be, it's like, take the Page Master or like any child story, basically. Yep. Like a child has to go down to the store to pick up a carton of milk, and shenanigans, like, gets kidnapped by pirates.
You're describing like every children's book.
Exactly.
My most favorite one of those, of course, being Matthew and the Midnight Tow Truck.
Yeah, but because I didn't read them, I'll just make it up as I go.
I highly recommend Matthew and the Midnight Tow Truck. Alternately, you are also describing the plot, literally describing the plot of Mermel, Mermel, Mermel by Robert Munsch.
Fair enough.
She is going to the store, and then she hears Mermel, Mermel, Mermel.
Oh, don't keep talking. I don't want to know.
And then there's a baby.
It's been about 24 years since I've read Robert Munsch. I've successfully forgotten
everything. It has been probably about the same for me, and I have forgotten almost none of it.
That's another place to get ideas from, right? You can take something simple, childish, innocent, and turn it on its head, make it dark. Or take something dark and make it sickeningly pleasant. You just have fun with it, right? Like, that's the whole idea, is you just have fun creating.
Mm-hmm.
So Jason Voorhees falls in love.
That would be
a great story. I would read that.
I would read the Jason Voorhees, Michael Myers, totally mute slash fic.
As opposed to the slasher fic.
Picking up what I'm putting down. That's what you're here for. But yeah, so I mean, having an idea is one thing. Andrew, how do you get in the groove? What is your recommendation? Like, well, how do you, once you have an idea, you have to then sit and write for 30 days.
Yeah, so I can only speak for myself, someone who has a day job and a wife and two kids who have activities and all that other sort of stuff. If you boil it down, and insomnia. So if you boil it down to the time I get to just write, it's a small number of hours by comparison to all the other stuff in my day. So I'm kind of wedged into this window that I have to write then, or I don't write at all.
Mm-hmm.
And my problem not in November is I take that time and I do something else.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the only time I have, and goddamn it, if I want to watch Sherlock, I'm going to watch Sherlock, because fuck you.
Understood.
Can I swear on this show?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So, finding the groove for me is really hard, because for 30 days in a row, and I should be doing this every day as a writer, but I don't, you got to sit down, you got to write. And the worst thing you can do is just sit here like this, not writing anything. So, to find the groove... if I'm having trouble getting words out, I take a really simple object, like a pencil. This one happens to be a mechanical pencil, so that's good news for me. And I write a story about it, just to get the words going. And mm-hmm. I imagine that this something happens to this pencil. It can be really innocent, like it falls into my glass of water. I won't, because it's your pencil.
Thank you.
And now I've got a drowning pencil. And I create a little story around that, just to get words flowing.
Okay.
And then I do that in a separate document.
The drowning pencil, by the way, sounds like an assassination tool from Harry Potter.
It could work. Yeah, so I do, and I need silence, but not silence. So I've got an app on my phone called Coffitivity. And it's just a coffee shop recording.
Yeah.
Weird.
And I put that headphone, and it's just, it's background noise, right?
Oh.
And I'll have a separate document over here, and I'll write it with my pencil, and I'll be having a great time, and words will start to flow, and the pencil will get a name, and it'll have friends, and things will happen to the pencil, and it'll be going. And as soon as I feel it coming, like as soon as I feel that those words just coming naturally out, I alt-tab to my doc where I was.
And you start writing about pencil?
No, I start dialogue. I always start with dialogue when I'm stuck, because I can imagine someone talking, and I can imagine their mannerisms and their tone of their voice and
okay.
the way they inflect, and that gets me into the story. So I've got words now, and I've got a character who's saying something, and if he's angry, okay, I got his arms waving, and I start writing that down. He's yelling at somebody, his arms are waving, and then I usually kill somebody.
Jesus.
When in doubt, murder a character.
Pencil?
Well, I'll do something exciting.
Fair enough.
Right? Because
yeah.
it'll get my heart rate up and it'll get the words going. And then once you're going, you just don't stop.
So when you read Andrew's books, you can find out when he got tired or bored by punctuating it with the deaths of characters. I wonder if this is also what George R. R. Martin does.
It could be. Like, but for me, something exciting will happen. It's not always death.
Mm.
But I try to get, like, I can't write a love scene when I'm stuck, because I just can't really feel it. I need to be very full of emotion in mm-hmm. that time. So for me, to find that groove, I need a real specific set of circumstances. And then you have to do that every day.
Yeah.
You have to sustain it. And it requires a lot of patience from those around you. I find. So my children and my wife are very generous with their time, with their patience for November, because they know that at any moment I could just run out of the room and grab my laptop and write something down.
Seal yourself in the cone of silence for...
I don't have a cone of silence, but I have like sequestered myself
like a
to a corner.
For 1 to 4 hours.
Yes. Yeah. So I know other people that have different ways to find the groove, like
mm-hmm. the I think it's
music, and
I think it's definitely different for everybody. Ryan, how do you get in your groove?
So it's been a while since I've written anything over a long period of time. It took me 2 years to write the thesis. So clearly I wasn't writing every day because it was less than 100 pages. I think for me, if I had to speculate on what it would take for me to succeed, it'd have to be highly habituated or at least ritualized. So it'd have to be...
That's what makes you lawful Ryan.
Yeah, it would have to probably be like a particular time of day and a particular commitment. So for example, right now, and this will probably be a shout out to a future episode that Jim and I do about habits... one of my daily habits is to read one page, because on a crappy day, if I don't feel like reading, at least I read one page. But if it's a good day, all I need is that one page to get me going. And so I think it'd have to be something like that I'd have to have like a 350 word starter. I don't know if I'd stop after 350. I might continue on if I feel like I've got something.
350 is like, well, that's like a page and a half.
Yeah. But I think I would have to have a particular time of day, you know, shut out the distractions like phone and internet, but not, like, I'd probably go down to a coffee shop or something, too. Something that there's stuff going on around me that I could use my environment to inspire me, but not something that's dead silence.
Ooh, daycare.
Especially if I'm going to be writing a story about a person going down to the grocery store. So I think those are some of the things that I would need to do to find a groove. And also, I tend to be a long-form writer. I don't... when I wrote my thesis, it was all longhand first. I went back and I typed it in afterwards.
Well, you've seen my show notes. That's about as good as it gets.
That's quite legible, honestly.
That's as good as it gets for fine. Me. And I can't cursive. I can't write cursive.
You can see I can write small.
You write tiny.
Yeah, and fairly neat.
Young eyes.
So...
For our listeners, Ryan's writing is very small. Andrew's writing, he thinks it's messy. It's not particularly messy.
I tried really hard, though.
Yeah, but you won't be getting an MD anytime soon.
I want a gold star. Silver star?
I'll see if I can dig one up.
Yeah. So I write everything longhand, because then by forcing myself to write it and then copy it onto the computer, then that usually is where the editing starts to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then... Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it'd be a particular time of day. It'd have to be bookended by particular things. So, like, when I go to the gym, for example, it's after work, but before I go and, like, do groceries. You know, and because the grocery store closes at 11, I have to get the gym in first and then go do groceries. Mm. So it gives me that fixed time point.
We have a friend who gets up at 4 a.m.
Oh, yeah. She's hardcore.
She's crazy. And she gets up at 4 a.m., and that's what she does. She grabs her tea... She gets up at 4 and she cracks her knuckles and boom, she writes when the world is silent.
Please tell me it's not a typewriter.
I don't know, but I'm going to ask her tonight.
I can totally imagine, and then she's got like Sean Connery in the background telling her to punch the keys! For Christ's sakes.
So yeah, I can see, and I've had advice given to me by some very successful writers that even if it's 15 minutes,
right?
And I have just never done that. And I think I'm going to start, because I've reached the point where I'm tired of not finishing something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think it ultimately comes down to, so like, you have a lot more experience, whereas me, I'd be trying to set these habits up, but in reflecting on me going to the gym over the last year, it, like, once I finally found a system that works for me, it's good. It may not be somebody else's system, and it might not be a system that works for somebody else, but I found a system that works for me that helps me to keep going. And then that's like the best part. Like you read the biographies, or you read about how other people work and their processes and their productivity, and you just steal all the bits that work for you and then fuse it together until it works.
Yeah. For me, like, so I'm most creative when I am in a room with at least one other person, usually 2 to 3. I do all my best stuff with, like, 4 people and no rules. Which, again, like, it's...
That's John Cleese style.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's... And that is. That's where I am funny. That's where I am funniest. That's where I am able to extemporize and improvise. You know, so that's where I can do a lot of, like, theater performance stuff. That's what I do when telling stories or doing poetry or things like that, as I am... And I have this my term for it, I don't think I ever finished the post on this because I could never figure out enough about how it worked, but it is awakening the dark, my darkness. There's that moment when your fingers get all tingly and loose and you're just like, ooh, oh. And that's when my, because what I'm looking for, usually it happens when I get together with a bunch of friends from out of town and we all roll up characters and we're going to do a thing. We have no plan. There's no like, you know, yeah, I made these notes 2 years ago. Or, no. It's like, it's off, entirely off the cuff. We're going to tell a story tonight. We're going to play a game tonight. What is it? And I go looking, I sort of look at a bunch of parameters and I go hunting for that answer and it's always there. And there's that moment of like epiphany where I know what needs to happen and I know what elements need to be in place to make this a fun and interesting story. And we just do it. But doing that on my own, alone, I find really challenging. Like, I need...
You feed off people.
Oh, totally, yeah. Like I am a creative extrovert in the sense that, yeah, like, I have written songs by myself, but the songs I write with you or the songs I write with Kaylee are vastly better. Because there's...
All you need's a hug.
There's a back and forth, yeah.
We still have to record that.
Yes. But, and it's the kind of thing where, yeah, you can, instead of writing a song over, like, the course of, like, 3 weeks, you can write a song in, like, 20 minutes or an hour. The lullaby that we wrote, I'll link to it in the show notes. We did it at the Poetry Slam a few months ago, back in summer, actually. That was, like, 2 hours of just chords and words. And, like, there were tears first time we played it.
Nice.
It was really sort of flattering.
That's cool.
But yeah, it's like it's one of those things where once I have that feeling, once I'm possessed by that certainty, it's easy. It's like Tetris. It's here are the pieces, here are the symbols, here is where they need to go. But until I have that, it's just nothing.
I developers, I don't know if anyone knows any people who write code in this town.
Maybe a few. I do work at a software company.
They call it flow, right? Finding flow, where it's just tunnel vision and everything is just flying. I love that feeling. I write just to feel that every once in a while. And it doesn't happen often. It happened to me once in the whole month last year of November where I did more than 5,000 words in a day.
Wow.
And it was just, everything was just working. And, oh, man, it's the greatest feeling in the world.
That actually I've noticed. The other thing is I now, for the past year, I've had a job that really uses a lot of creativity. I spend all day solving problems, imagining new problems, and trying to solve them for future people. And it is sort of mentally taxing in a way that a lot of my other jobs haven't been. So I find that I have a lot less of that energy, which is weird, I think, because that's not how it works.
Yeah, I don't know. Because, like, I'm the same... I work all day. I'm at work for 7:30 in the morning. And when I get home from work, I just want to take a nap because I'm mentally beat. But I got to do dinner. I got to get the kids to wherever they're going, homework, projects, whatever the fuck is going on.
Yeah, I don't have any of these things.
Right?
So I don't even really have to make dinner.
So, yeah, you just sit and you go, oh. You long to get that spark.
I feel like that's where the Chuck Wendig comes in. I mean, Chuck, as much as I will talk flighty about awakening my darkness, I understand the Chuck Wendig answer. And the answer which I subscribe to, I started reading Chuck's blog when I was working on my thesis, is that even if you don't have that feeling or that groove, write anyway.
Yeah, art harder, motherfucker. I love his slogan. I want it on a mug, but I can't put the have the mug anywhere. yeah, you gotta do it anyway. I read a great quote, and I'll find it. And it is, if you only write when you feel like it, you might be a fairly decent poet, but you'll never be a novelist.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm finding that out right now, having had several hundred thousand words under my belt.
You're a fairly decent poet?
I am a fairly decent... I'm not even a decent poet. I'm actually going to start taking a class or paying a writing coach simply so that I am... It's costing me something.
Mm-hmm.
And I
like
am
working with a personal trainer.
I am more cheap than I am lazy, and it will kill me to be forking over money with no result, just so I can do it even when I don't have to.
Mm-hmm.
And it will be surprising to me, and maybe it won't be surprising to me, how much more often the spark will happen as a result.
Reminds me of, I think it's a Picasso quote of inspiration finds you when you're working hard or something like that.
Something like that.
That is the kind of thing Picasso would say.
Yeah. Although I just read another story about his where somebody said, I'll pay you to draw a picture on a napkin. He draws the picture. Did you send that to me?
No.
Okay, anyways, he draws a picture on a napkin, slides it over, and says $1 million. And the guy's like, what, $1 million? It took you 5 minutes? He goes, yes, but it took me 10 years to figure out how to do that in 5 minutes.
Yep. I picked that up from Ken Stacey.
Nice.
Ken Stacey, he's a comic illustrator. He's a super cool guy. You can also see him at Desert Bus, which will be happening in November. Plug for Desert Bus, because Desert Bus is awesome. They're a week-long charity marathon where they play Desert Bus for Desert Bus from Smoke and Mirrors, Penn and Teller's game. And they raise money for Child's Play, which donates toys and video games to children's hospitals. And Ken Stacey does the Ken Stacey Value Hour there, so he auctions off all kinds of cool stuff. Last year, one of the things he auctioned off were he illustrated Astro Boy for a while.
Ooh.
And so there was blueprints, original blueprints in a case for Astro Boy, which was amazing.
There were people interested in that for sure.
It was really. He's always got really cool stuff, but I saw him, and he always did these sketches at cons and stuff. And whenever they're looking at his art, they always ask him, how long did it take you to do that? And he always says the same thing. He's always like, 50 years. And they're like, what do you mean? It took you 50 years to draw that? He's like, yes. I mean, he's like, but I've seen you draw stuff in 5 minutes. He's like, yeah, but it took me 50 years to learn to do it in 5 minutes. And it's that notion I think the sentiment for him is that it's not just about the thing that you produce. It's about all of the expertise it takes and the time and the experience it takes to get you to the point where you can produce that in any amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is best summed up by the phrase, art harder, motherfucker.
Long live Chuck.
So our next episode, unsurprisingly, Andrew will still be here. Unsurprisingly, the video configuration will be basically the same, but we will talk to you all about how to survive and thrive in National Novel Writing Month. So I am Jim.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Andrew.
We're signing off.
Get writing.
Do not.
Googly eyes on your ass.
Do not. Show my camera your butt.